This episode is brought to you by Foster Sundry, a specialty grocery located in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Have you ever wanted to open a restaurant, launch your own food brand, or dive into the ever-changing world of food media? Well, buckle up. Join us for Aspiration to Action, a special live podcast on Monday, June 3rd at Haven's Kitchen in Manhattan. Zara Tangora and Bretton Scott, hosts of Life's a Banquet, will lead us through tales of the good, the bad, and the transformative. Featuring food world innovators and HRN hosts, Dana Cowan, host of Speaking Broadly, Eli Sussman, host of The Line, along with his brother Max, and Allison Kane, host of In the Sauce, in conversation with Jenny Britton Bauer. Light refreshments will be provided by Paris Gourmet, Wolfer Estate Vineyard, and Tahani. Get your tickets before they sell out by going to heritageradionetwork.org/action.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, it's May 28th, 2019. I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio. We're here on the heritageradionetwork.org. We got a special show today. The event Rib King NYC is coming up this week, and it's a sister to Brisket King NYC, which has been pretty popular for a while. And we're lucky to have two of the chefs here, as well as a brewer who has made some collaboration beers with a couple of the barbecue chefs. So let's go around the room. Everyone introduce themselves, starting with Rob.
Yeah, I'm Rob Cho with Kimchi Smoke Barbecue in Westwood, New Jersey.
And I'm Blake Crawford, head of brewing operations at the Elementary in Hackensack, New Jersey.
And I'm Eric Springer. I'm the overnight pit boss over at Morgan's Barbecue in Brooklyn.
All right, so we're going to dive right into this. We're going to start talking about ribs and barbecue 101. We've had some really interesting conversations before the show started. So, Eric, tell us about cooking ribs. What's 3-2-1?
Well, I'm kind of backing away from that right now because when I think about ribs, I think it is my favorite thing to eat in barbecue. I know I was going off about brisket earlier. It's just because what I like to do. But when you first kind of learn to start doing, you know, ribs at home, the 3-2-1 was what you always heard, and it was basically just 3 hours in smoke after you've given it your rack of ribs a nice rub and trim, and then 2 hours where you'll wrap it in foil and put a little liquid in there too, just to, you know, kind of keep it nice and soft and give it some more flavor depending on what liquid you put in there. And then finally that last hour is you just taking it out and glazing it and just kind of making it look really good and taste perfect, make sure everything's cooked perfectly.
And Rob, is that how you learned to cook ribs?
Yeah, I mean, I just
started. We're talking about pork ribs too, right?
We're talking about pork ribs, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I started doing ribs too. That was the first thing I ever smoked. You know, the fastest. It wasn't a long cook, so I watched a lot of YouTube videos. You know, get a lot of techniques, and then somewhere down the line, 3-2-1, you know, seemed like the method to go. You know, you don't have to do it that way, but it's definitely a good starting point.
And this is a great mix of kind of what we've showcased in New York City because, I mean, Rob, you're Korean. Tell us your background.
Yeah, I'm a Korean-American. I immigrated to the States when I'm 4. You know, I'm well into my 40s, so I've been here a long time, so I don't necessarily consider myself Korean. I feel I am 100% Korean and 100% American. Therefore, I like to incorporate that into my cooking, into my barbecue, which is, you know, more or less now, even like things like kimchi, you know, I started 6 years ago. It's become sort of an American staple. You know, you can go to Whole Foods, you can go to ShopRite, you can find kimchi. So I don't think it's so much fusion or some kind of fad, but you know, just the whole, we've been talking about barbecue evolving, you know, it's come a long way in the last 10 years.
So it's really going on with the food in Houston in general, too, is like, you know, the Vietnamese food, it's become the norm.
Yeah.
A lot of the things that are Vietnamese food have become the norm, like it's at restaurants.
Exactly. Right before you walked in, sorry, we were talking about Vietnamese, the crawfish curries that are happening all over.
Of course, like I said,
Vietnam.
That's everywhere now, for sure.
Yeah. And Eric, you're from Houston.
I was born and raised in Houston, lived there all my life. I followed my wife here to New York City about 5 or 6 years ago, and it's been a pleasure.
And we're going to talk a lot more about the different, you know, flavors and cultures and everything, but I'm still fascinated by Texas because Texas barbecue has kind of taken over New York And to me, I never really knew it, even though we've done Brisket King for years and now we're doing Rib King event. I mean, what is Texas barbecue? What's the trinity of the dishes?
Is it okay to swear on the radio here? Yeah. I just wanted to make sure because, you know, when I'm going to talk about Texas barbecue, there's going to be a lot of words like that kind of getting thrown around. Texas, as you know, is the kind of place where we do everything right and all y'all don't know what the fuck y'all are talking about. That's just kind of how, you know, you grew up. I mean, even coming to New York City, you know, like 5 or 6 years ago, you know, I was real skeptical about it just because you grew up in a culture where, you know, on TV you see like commercials that say, you know, picante sauce made in New York City, get a rope. You know, that's something you saw and you grew up with. And so it kind of gets ingrained to you just to hate things, like, you know, from the Northeast. But nothing could be, you know, further from the truth. From getting here, it's completely the opposite of that. And I regret everything that I felt or said, you know, bad about it in the past. But getting back to just, you know, talking about...
Get a rope as in hang yourself?
Well, yeah. Well, no, we're gonna if you make picante sauce, right, but you're from New York City, well, that ain't right. And we're going to get a... Somebody's going to get a rope and we're going to string you up by your neck from a tree until you die, like a good old lynching, which is the worst thing you could possibly want to put onto a commercial for your... picante sauce, but in Texas that sells, that flies, those things will fly off the shelf. You know, that's a real commercial. Get a rope, all right, get a cart, honey, and let's go get some picante sauce. I like these guys. And that kind of, you know, that kind of sucks because the way things are now, I mean, everything is kind of like said, includes like no place on the planet that I've been too many places, but Houston is really brought in kind of like I said with the Vietnamese food and Thai food and Asian food in general. And then all kinds of other foods too. It's just like it's a big, you know, it's a big melting pot.
And Blake, You're originally from where?
I am from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
And what kind of barbecue traditions do you have there?
So in Arkansas agriculture, we don't have cows. We have pigs and chickens. So beef barbecue was completely foreign to me growing up. Okay. I can count on one hand the number of times I had either beef rib or brisket. You know, the most common thing to happen was ribs. You know, that was like pork rib was the thing that I grew up on. And the thing that I still go after when I'm going to a barbecue restaurant looking for barbecue, that's usually where I start.
Y'all do any whole hog stuff there?
Not so much. Whole hog, you start going a little bit more east. Like as you get closer to Memphis and those areas start moving further east, you see more whole hog. We used to do a lot of pulled pork and a lot of pork rib. No baby backs, though. Always St. Louis cut.
To bring us into the story, so you say you like making beer collaborations more with chefs than with other brewers.
I do. I mean, I love beer collaborations in general. Beer collaborations with chefs are beer collaborations with brewers are fun. They're great fun. It's not to disparage, you know, any brewer or working with them. Chefs just have a different point of view on the world. Chefs are used to number one, food tasting like they want it to taste like. So they bring a very different point of view to making beer than brewers typically will bring. And chefs are also used to making very, very tiny adjustments that have a huge impact, right? If you want something to be a little saltier, you just add a little salt to it. If you want something to be a little sweeter, you add a little sugar to it. Making beer is not quite so finite like that, right? When we're making beer, you know, 800 gallons at a time, it's you can't just add a little bit of this or a little bit of that and make it come out like you want.
You and Rob, tell us about the beer collaboration you guys made. I like the name, the Soul Brothers.
Yeah, Soul Brothers. So many people don't know this, but Rob has been a friend of ours at our brewery since basically the day we opened the doors. He was, you know, the first pop-up that we had there at the brewery, and he's been very, you know, supportive of us since. And so... You know, he said earlier that he has he's 100% Korean and he's 100% Texas. And when I taste his barbecue, I taste a Korean influence on Texas barbecue. And I think that's very interesting. So he and I said, you know, one day we're hanging out at the brewery, probably had more than one beer at this point. And we said, well, can we bring the Korean drinking experience to American craft beer? Is that possible? And what does that mean? So, of course, I had to stop everything and start drinking incredible amounts of soju and mak goli and all of these Korean things, and started finding a set of flavors that we thought kind of fit the bill that ended up being Soul Brothers. So what we knew we wanted was a specific rice flavor. A lot of Korean alcohols will carry a fruitiness to them that are reminiscent of pears.
And the biggest thing about them is, like, whether you're drinking makgeolli or whether you're drinking soju, you really don't know it's kicking your ass until it's too late, right? Like, you need to, they're easy to drink. And then the alcohol kind of sneaks up on you. And that begat the Soul Brothers experiment. So this is a 7.5% high rice ale. We use a puffed jasmine rice, like a torrefied jasmine rice product, and a Korean pear concentrate to create this beer. And so we think it sort of fairly represents what Rob's Barbecue is to Texas, is what this beer
is. So this is the elementary Soul Brothers.
Yeah.
And Rob, how did you wait? It sounds like Blake figured the whole thing out for you. What did you do in this beer collaboration?
I did not figure the whole thing out.
Well, it was sort of like that. I mean, I just told him, like, all right, these are the things that I think would make a good beer. You know, not necessarily making it spicy. You know, some people think of kimchi, Korean, oh, we're going to make it spicy. I didn't want a spicy beer. I wanted something to complement spicy foods, complement barbecue. And I just told him what I was going for. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, they come out with the test batch, and I go, this is good, and I wouldn't change a thing. So we got pretty lucky in that sense. We didn't have to do, you know, wait for the beer to ferment for a couple of weeks or 10 days and then, you know, do a tweak on it. Told them what I was going for. Mm-hmm. They came out with something.
I like it. What do you think, Eric?
I'm stunned because it's kind of a crisp, refreshing, like kind of like that rice kind of beer taste. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you said this is 7.5%.
Yeah, exactly.
That's blowing my mind. Yeah. And this is a great barbecue beer.
But it's still fruity. Yeah. It still has got
cleanliness
to it.
It's got a little fresh, clean taste to it.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, if you get a couple of pints in you, that 7.5% is going to show.
Well, and that's
itself.
The whole point. Is like you're eating barbecue. And when you're eating barbecue, you're not going to have, you know, two pitchers of beer while you're eating barbecue. Okay? No. You're going to have maybe two pints of beer, and you're going to go home and go to sleep after that because of the food and because of the beer. Yeah. So that's the perfect beer to go with a trade.
So let's talk about your first barbecue experiences. So, Eric, you know, you said growing up in Texas, where'd you get barbecue?
I'm going to try to make this quick. I'm my father's a coach. I played sports all my life. And the deal is you know, when I was a coach, too. Before I got involved in barbecue, that's what I did. I was a teacher and a coach. And so when you're in Texas and you're coaching, I played basketball. I was primarily a basketball coach, but I coached golf and track and football, because football is king, right? And so what would happen is on Friday nights, I'd be part of a scout team, and we'd go to all different parts of Texas. So on a Friday night, when everyone else is back at home watching the game and having a good time, me and a couple of the coaches would drive to, you know, Navasota or College Station or Plano, and then all these to scout a football game. But we'd leave early. We'd get to cut out of school early. I was always great about that. And what we'd do every single time is we would go to whatever the best barbecue restaurant was there. And so for about 5, 6, 7 years, all I did all year long was go to the best barbecue restaurants all over Texas. Now, that's when I was in my 20s. Growing up, my grandparents lived in Huntsville, and there's a barbecue restaurant called Baptist Zion Church. It's one of the most famous barbecue restaurants in Texas. It's a different kind of style. It's more of an Eastern Texas style with a lot of sauces involved, not central, you know, with no sauces involved. But, I mean, it's very famous, and it was what I ate every day since I was probably every weekend since about 5 or 6 years old. That's what I was getting. It was what I was eating. You know, that's grandma would come back and say,
You went out to get barbecue. You didn't make it at home.
No, I didn't really know anyone ever made it at home. It was always something you went to and you would go buy, you know, or someone would have a smoker and then it would be a party and you would be like, you'd be eating theirs at the party, but you wouldn't be making it. You'd be at a party. Someone else would do it.
What about Rob? When did you first start having barbecue or food like that?
Well, food like that, yeah. I mean, you know, I grew up in Jersey, so I didn't have real barbecue in the sense of smoked meats until somewhere in the mid-2000s, you know, watching TV. And that's when the whole barbecue bug got me, you know. People ask me, you know, am I from Texas? How did I learn how to smoke? I just saw it on TV. And sort of like growing up, you know, I watched Dr. J play basketball. I go to the playground, try to imitate his moves. I saw this thing on Food Network or YouTube, go to the park and just try smoking meat. So that was my first experience because, you know, in Jersey, you know, only until maybe 5, 6 years ago has smoking meats gotten to be a thing. So I didn't really grow up with that tradition of smoked meats.
And we were going to talk about that we're really, especially in the Northeast, it's come a long way. I mean, even brisket, just a few years ago, I felt like there wasn't consistent brisket.
Just in the 5 or 6, 7 years I've been here, it's been completely gone like through the roof. Like there used to be one or two good places. Now there's at least a dozen. I mean, and any of the places that you wouldn't say are great, they're still doing it good enough to be considered good Texas barbecue. It's amazing how far it's come this fast.
What was your journey, Rob? I mean, to go from trying to be Dr. J and watching TV to
New York Nets Dr. J, right? New York Nets Dr. J?
I'm not that old. Yeah, I mean, I started in about 2013. I just started as a little food vendor, going to street fairs. Then 2014, did some more street fairs. And I went to my first Brisket King in 2014, and I saw, wow, you know, a lot of people came out for the barbecue there, for the brisket, and for the following year, that was one of my goals. So I'll be tweeting at Jimmy, like, I want in. I want to be part of this Brisket King, you know. And
that was my first year, too.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. And then, you know, just slowly just developing my skills, my confidence, my brand. So from 2013 to 2016, just putting my name out there. And then 2016, I opened my first brick and mortar.
Well, so great. Just to add to that, because Rob's from my neighborhood, my husband Michael and I, we spent 2 years basically chasing him all over New Jersey. He was doing pop-ups in donut shops because they had fryers and what have you available to them. And he has this thing called a chonut, which is a donut cut in half like a sandwich bun on which he puts brisket sauce and this kimchi coleslaw. I have had exactly one bite of a chonut in my life, and I declared that it needed to be as far away from me as humanly possible, or I was going to... it was amazing. It's like, I'm going to eat 30 of them if this is not far away from me.
Well, that's so, one reason we only sell it on Fridays and Saturdays. Yeah. You know?
So his first brick and mortar, because he's a jerk, his first brick and mortar was about a quarter mile walk from our house. So I had to, like... survive with this barbecue.
At least you got to walk.
walk it off.
You walk to your meal and then you walk home. That's the secret.
Jog there and walk home.
Yeah, I'm always like the best restaurants. If I can walk there and walk home, it's a better experience for me.
It is.
And quick, let's back to the beer. So the first beer we had actually, this Island Life. It's kind of salty.
It's crazy. Yeah,
it's great.
Island Life.
Elementary Island Life.
Elementary Island Life. When we first opened, we had a key lime Goza. Goza is a sour style beer that has a little bit of sea salt added to it. We launched with a key lime version of this beer. And then I found a fruit provider actually at a conference not long ago at the Craft Brewers Conference. And I tasted this weird fruit called a calamansi. It's a Filipino fruit that's a genetic hybrid between a kumquat and a mandarin orange, and it looks like a lime, but it's bright yellow on the inside. It's this crazy weird fruit.
What's it called again?
Calamansi.
Calamansi.
Yeah,
you can buy the juice in the city. Yeah, a couple specialty suppliers.
And the weird thing about it is, it tastes like every tropical fruit you've ever had. It's like it doesn't matter what your happy, fun, sunny beach place is. This beer takes you to that place. It's nice. If you want it to be pineapple, it tastes like pineapple. If you want it to be
like
orange.
There's like a calamansi goza. Like
the tofu of fun.
It exactly.
Takes it all.
We made it once and did a little test market of it, and it has taken over just about everything. So that is the official beer of New Jersey summer. Sure. As they say, like down the shore, we're selling a ton of that this year. It's just bright, sunny, delicious, easy, crushable, salty. It's like Gatorade with, in beer form.
That's great. And Rob, how did you connect with this beer collaboration? Is interesting. So, Blake, I know you also made beer with Wandering Q.
Yep, that is in process.
White,
yeah,
for the Kiddish Fest. Mm-hmm. How did you decide to make a beer with them?
Well, one of the things, I guess, if I didn't get into barbecue, I probably would have gotten into either making makgeolli, which is a Korean rice ale, or beer. But then, I just got smitten with barbecue, and it just took all my time and energy. And then during that time, I bought my cousin a beer kit, and he was making some beer. But if I had the time, I would make it. And then I was thinking of like, okay, maybe I had a slow week, so like, oh yeah, maybe I'll make a beer. But then I'm like, I don't really have time to make a beer, and I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. So I just talked to Blake and be like, hey, let's do a beer collab. This is what I'm looking for. Can you do it? And I knew they would do a better job than me, which would take me probably months or a year to figure out. Yeah. You know, I didn't have the time to do that.
Yeah, this was a fun collaboration because it is at its core an American craft beer. It is what it is, right? But it has this kind of Korean tilt to it that we find very charming. Like we enjoy it, our patrons enjoy it, people love it with all manner of food. Like it is a beer that is built to pair with food. People love it with Thai food. People love it with barbecue. People love it with anything that carries a little bit of fat and a little bit of salt with it. Whether that fat come in the form of like brisket or coconut milk doesn't really seem to matter. People have really come to the purpose of the beer, and they buy it for that reason.
You know, we were talking about innovations in barbecue, and is that really the right term to talk about? Especially what's going on. We said Houston. There's different influences, and definitely in New York City.
Yeah, I don't think it's innovation. I think it's more just evolution.
Yeah, I was just going to say evolution. You're exactly right.
Or just people's, you know, cultures just coming to light. You know, like, you know, I'm kimchi smoke, but I don't really do Korean barbecue. But I cook in a way that I grew up the way I ate. You know, like my parents would bring kimchi to barbecues, you know, grilling events. And, you know, so when I'm cooking now, and that's just the way I like to eat. So I'm not trying to be innovative. I'm not trying to be creative. This is the way I like to eat. And to other people, hey, that might be out of the box, creative. But, you know, I think it's just we're becoming more acceptive of different cultures. So here in New York, we don't have Texas-style barbecue, or we don't grow up with Carolina or Memphis. So in New York, we have all different traditions, all melting pots coming together. So I just think, you know, this is just the way we eat.
It's evidence of the world getting a little smaller, too. It's like it's evidence of things getting a little tighter and getting better in that regard also. A quick example of that I can just throw out there real quick is burnt ends. Everyone's talking about burnt ends. When where I'm from in Texas, I mean, for a while, the saying going around is burnt ends, not friends. because you know what burnt ends is, right? Burnt ends is where you take the good part of the brisket and you dice it and cube it and you put a bunch of sauce on it and you serve it.
Yeah.
And where I'm from, that's bullshit. All right. You don't do that. All right. And so everyone coming and asking, we're going to make burnt ends. Well, I just had to kind of rethink things for a little bit. So what I can do is I can pastrami, you know, the flat, and then I can take the point off and I can do burnt ends with that. And so I've had to kind of reframe my thinking on burnt ends.
Eric, on that note, the recent Brisket King event, you made burnt ends.
Yeah.
What was that dish? Because
that was exactly what I'm talking about. That's right. Like if I was going to do burnt ends, I wasn't just going to just slaughter a brisket that I'd already made. I was going to do it for a reason. And I wanted to make pastrami because it's in New York City, and I was kind of thinking that way. And so
it was a pastrami brisket. You served pastrami and burnt ends.
So the process you take a brisket and you got to separate the point from the flat. When you separate the point from the flat, what you basically have is you got ready-made burnt ends with that point, and then you got ready-made pastrami with that flat. And so I do the pastrami process with the flat, and then I save those burnt ends or I save those points and wrap them up until it's time to cook them, and this will all be ready at the same time. And I've been doing it so long now, I got a process where on the weekend, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, I'll have burnt ends, and Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, I'll have pastrami, and it works that way every week because I've been doing it for so long now. But the point I'm trying to make about that is both of those things I'm talking about doing, where I'm from, it'd be a get a rope kind of situation, you know what I mean? Nobody wants to hear about that. All right, but things are changing now, and now people in Texas are doing things like burnt ends that are made out of pork belly. Pork belly burnt ends. Y'all heard of this thing
totally.
Going on?
I did it last weekend,
a big thing right now. But people would argue with you and say, that's not burnt ends. It's not burnt ends. You can't burn a pork belly. I mean, if you talk about what a burnt end is supposed to be, it's the burned part of the brisket that used to cut off and just serve to people in the line. That's what burnt ends is. So how do you burn end a pork belly?
Just give it as a taste
in Kansas, right? Kansas City. That's what they used to do. They wouldn't trim. They just throw the whole thing in there, and then they would trim it, and they'd put this part off and say, here's a little morsel for you because it's too fatty, it's too rich, it's too burnt. But it was delicious. They loved it. And they loved it so much, that's what became a thing. And it became such a thing, it evolved into something different. And whereas a person from Texas might say, that's crap, and not get into it anymore. That's crap.
I like the idea of waiting in line and getting the free samples while I wait. I like that.
I actually just taught, we're at elementary, we're building our second brewery right now, and it's just on the edge of being done. And my electrician, of all people, was asking me about pork belly burnt ends and how does he cook pork belly burnt ends. So we took him to the store. We bought him a pork belly. I was like, okay, here's what you got to do to do pork belly burnt ends. It's quite a thing.
Well, then we're just going to take a short break because we got to get a message in here. And we'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Foster Sundry, a specialty grocery located in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Since opening in August 2015, Foster Sundry has evolved into a neighborhood hub for weekend brunch, weeknight groceries, coffee on your morning commute, a draft beer after work, and so much more. Their cheese counter, whole animal butcher, and produce section make grocery shopping a pleasure. Foster Sundry also offers catering and wholesale. Learn more at fostersundry.com. That's FOSTERSUNDRY.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're talking about ribs, barbecue, brewing Q, and Rib King NYC's this week. But Rob Cho, Kimchi Smoke, Blake from Elementary, and Eric from Morgan's Brooklyn Barbecue. So, Blake, this is going to be my Jersey Shore beer of summer, man.
That is.
Elementary Island Life.
It's nice, right?
So it's a calamansi goza.
Calamansi goza. Calamansi is a Filipino fruit. There's about 70 kilograms of that. So that's like, 150 pounds thereabouts of that goes into one 15-barrel batch of that beer. The interesting thing about it is the calamansi we get frozen in 1 kilogram bricks. So one of my brewers has to spend an impossibly long amount of time on top of a ladder with individual 1 kilogram packages of calamansi, 70 at a time.
Wow.
Not a dash. It's a lot.
You know, last time I had you on was a couple years ago. You're on with Brick City.
Yep.
Tell us about the craft beer scene in your part of New Jersey. Because it's come a long way.
It is awesome. And it is awesome for New York listeners to actually to come to understand. Because we're literally 4 miles across the GWB. It's not an insurmountable journey. But we have, of course, the Elementary in Hackensack. We have our original brewery and tap room at 58 Voorhees Lane, and our new brewery is directly across the street, like literally, 50 yards away at 55 Voorhees Lane. We have Brick City, which is 3 miles down the road. Joe and Pete own that place down in Little Ferry. And then right between the two of us, a little closer to us, actually, we have Hackensack Brewing Company, owned by Mike Jones. They just opened up back in February. They're 600 feet away. So, for viewers who are looking to experience some awesome New Jersey beers and not have a huge journey into New Jersey, you can cross the bridge and hit three breweries, like one right after the other. I would love to have a distillery just around the corner. This is the new thing that I'm pushing the town for. It's like, if you can give me more food truck permits than a distillery, we would be home free. But it's great. New Jersey has long been behind New York and Pennsylvania in terms of craft beer production and beer production per capita.
When your new brewery opens, you're going to be selling in New York City?
Oh, 100%. So the reason for that brewery is we are going to be selling New York statewide, including the five boroughs, and the remainder of New Jersey. Right now, we're in about 255 locations just in northern New Jersey. We haven't crossed the river yet, and we haven't even gone down to most of New Jersey.
So you made this special batch of beer with Rob, Soul Brothers. Is that a beer that you're going to roll out and sell, or is this just it's a one-batch beer?
I ain't going to lie, Jimmy. I'm actually kind of scared of that beer because I think that once people get that beer and they start tasting it, I think it's going to take over a lot of capacity. I think when we bring that beer into the city, that particular beer...
I'd buy a case right now.
Yeah.
I think you're going to walk home with one, Eric.
That style of beer with the types of foods that are popular amongst adventurous eaters right now in the five boroughs, I don't know that we can make enough of it, to be honest with you.
Let's talk about this event coming up, Rib King NYC. Both Eric and Rob, you're going to be competitors.
Yeah.
What are some of the flavors that you're working with? Because I have a feeling that they go well with these beers. What are you going to do, Rob? Are you dry rub? Are you doing pork or beef?
Jimmy's asking for the secret sauce already.
I guess some people.
Kimchi smoke. You had a lot of posts about it. I'm really interested in what you're actually going
to
make.
Okay, so what I'm going to do, I guess the people listening, my competitors probably be listening to this afterwards if they do it all. So, yeah, for this, I want to do something.
We should present the trophy now, you're saying.
Totally different. I'm instead of doing Korean-style ribs, right now I'm leaning toward, I mean, it could change, but I'm leaning toward going to a five-spice Chinese sticky rub. Sticky sauce rib, you know, so sort of like the ribs that you might get in a Chinese takeout. So I'm gonna smoke them, you know, smoke them to perfection. Oof. And then put a glaze on it,
like a hoisin sauce,
glaze, but not too strong, because everything I like to do is about balance. You know, it's not too much of this or too much of that, but just a really well balanced rib. And then we're gonna have some elementary beer, so I think it'll just be a perfect complement. That's what I'm looking to do.
You're going
to
do pork.
I'm going to do pork.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And are you going to do the 3-2-1, 6 hours? Or
I will do 3-2-1, you know, to get it really moist and tender. But Rib King poses a challenge because, you know, we have to hold it for a long time. I have to leave my restaurant around 2:30, 3 o'clock. You know, it might take 2 hours to get to Brooklyn, and I have to make sure that, you know, they don't get overdone while I'm bringing them over. So that's the challenge for this event.
Might cook them a little bit under just so they can hold it a little longer.
Exactly. So that's a tip to anyone competing. You know, you have to compensate for the time that, you know, you're bringing them there. But to me, when I think of ribs, I love beef ribs, but when we're talking about ribs, that's the first thing I started cooking. It's about pork to me. And I saw the trophy, a beautiful trophy. It's a rack of, looks like St. Louis ribs. So to me, ribs is pork.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to call.
Yeah,
I have a question about the 3-2-1. Yes. I just want to interject because when I do the 3-2-1 at home, because I've become a home barbecue, there's a whole story there, but I've become a home barbecue guy. And I think, to my experience, the 3-2-1 produces a rib that is like fall off the bone tender, which is not how the ribs were I had growing up. And I think, you know, I grew up in Arkansas where a good pork rib had a certain bite to it.
Yeah, like you don't want anything falling off the bone. You want it to have a little bit of pull, so but not fall off the bone.
Do you think people on the coast are a little more tolerant of that softer texture, like that more tender texture than
I
you
think? They just don't understand or know. Like, you get a lot of people coming in our restaurant, and it's like they say, "This chicken's pink. This chicken's not. It's smoke. It's the pink is the smoke." You know, or you're like, hey, what do you mean you're out of brisket? Go make some more. Go make some more brisket. What do you mean you're out? How can you be out? And it's like, that's a point of pride in a barbecue restaurant, is selling your brisket out before 5 o'clock. If you can do that, means it's good. And so if you're not getting it, it means you're not getting there soon enough. The burden's on you. So there's a lot of different things. The
reason I ask is I hadn't heard of the 3-2-1 until I moved to the coast from Arkansas. So that method was foreign to me.
No. But I would say, you know, you don't have to stick to 3-2-1.
No.
I would, you know, whatever works for you. You can go 2-2-1.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
3-1-2.
Or 3-1-1.
Yeah.
3-1, 30 minutes. Yeah. You know, it's not exactly, you know, really 3-2-1 doesn't tell you how big the ribs are, doesn't tell you what type of smoker you're using, heat. So that's just the guideline. But if you want, you know, less tender or less fall off the bone, then definitely cut back on one of the
good thing about ribs is you can tell if it's red or not just by looking at them. You can see those bones pulling out at a certain point, and you know it looked like before it went in, and then you know it's good. So you don't have to really cut into it or temp it. And if it's got the, you know, meat's pulling back off the bone about, you know, a quarter inch all the way around, then you know you're close.
Yes.
And so that's a good thing. But we're doing it, Morgan's, for the contest. Is we're doing the kind of the opposite thing. We're going simple, you know, because good barbecue, you know, best barbecue is just, you know, salt, pepper, and doing it right. And bringing out something as simple as, you know, like a slab of spare ribs it's, you know, what are you going to do? If you just do it right, it's going to be delicious, and that's what we're serving at the restaurant. And so that's probably, we're just going to truck out something like that, just try to do it right.
So there's some magic to a brisket. But it seems that with ribs, isn't it really more just about the sauce?
It can be. I mean, especially when you're talking about like mops and stuff like that, Memphis style, and all kinds of different ribs. the great thing about ribs is that it does have a lot of kind of lateral movement with what you're going to do with them. That's why I love hearing about like a kind of, what is it, hoisin sauce and Chinese style rib. That just made my mouth, I started drooling. I had to close my mouth. Ribs just has it's a lot of play for doing stuff like that. Like, you cannot do with a brisket. Is just, you're just going to do it one way.
Secret,
that's it. But both ribs, there's so many different things you can
do. Best barbecue sauce I ever had some hoisin in it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And a rib contest, usually they'll say the only thing that is the standard is what kind of ribs you're going to use. Like, is it going to be a St. Louis cut, or is it going to be a spare rib cut, or is it going to be, we're going to do beef? And for contest this time around, I don't think there's even that. Like,
there's no rules.
You can do anything you want. Like, I can do brontosaurus ribs if I want to do brontosaurus ribs, and that'd be cool.
There might be some beef. I think we've got two kosher. We've got Izzy's Brooklyn Barbecue is doing
that place
kosher
blows
beef.
Me away. They had never tasted barbecue before. Yeah, they're making the best barbecue in New York City.
Wandering,
I think the place
Q
is great.
Is
I gotta
doing,
go there.
Kosher lamb.
Yeah, they're
how about
doing,
Hill Country? What did I see a potter's doing beef?
I don't know what they're doing yet. They one of our judges
can't
was
beat beef, man. It's
they're
expensive,
eating the
though.
Beef rib. Yeah, the beef ribs are big. And what's the difference between cooking beef rib and pork rib?
Well, the main difference is cost. I mean, one beef rib is about the same price as a whole slab of pork ribs.
Tell us about the time you made pastrami beef rib. That was a good story.
It's not a good story. It's a bad story, but it'll probably be good for radio. I've been making pastrami, and I'm sitting in Texas. It's a place called the Chocolate Factory. It's in Tomball. It's one of I think it got either number one or number two or number three in the TM, the Texas barbecue, thing online, where it's like they rank all the barbecue restaurants in Texas, and Tomball just came out of nowhere and blew everyone out of the way. And what they'd been doing, I've been watching them kind of post stuff, and they've been making pastrami and then also they started making pastrami beef ribs. I was like, God, pastrami beef rib, that's gnarly. I want to try that. And so I've been doing pastrami anyway. And so in my big, bucket of brine, I just, I threw in some beef ribs in there. And then when I pulled them out and I put my typical rub on them, I smoked them. And then I cut into them. Sure enough, it just looked like pastrami, tastes like pastrami. And it was delicious. But like I said, it was a little rich. I don't know if that would have worked in a contest setting. It might have worked in a, come try this, in a restaurant, kind of like paired with some beer setting. But I don't know if that would have worked in a contest setting.
Rob, you just made some really good beef ribs, too.
Yeah, I mean, I love making beef ribs, and for beef ribs, I mean, I like to keep it simple. I mean, I love pastrami, but at the same time, I feel like to do the pastrami process to beef ribs, to me, I sort of think it's a waste because, he was saying beef ribs are expensive, and pastrami is a way to preserve some meat. You take a cheap cut of meat, and you want to make it, tender. You want to give it some flavor. So to me, I would never make a pastrami beef rib because beef rib is good. Pastrami is good, but to me, I don't know.
Don't mess with it. If it's not broke, don't fix it. You're right about that.
Exactly. So, I love making beef ribs too. So I struggle, if I made a Instagram post, should I do beef ribs or should I do pork ribs? And I was going back and forth. And, I love beef ribs. And actually, my favorite thing to eat in the world is Korean short ribs, karbi, which is just, thinly sliced short ribs. Grilled with some soy sesame marinade, and that's not really barbecue, and that's more grilling, but that is my favorite thing to eat. So if I did do a beef rib, it would probably be in that flavor profile.
I like that. That sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Well, Blake, with beer, the secret ingredient seems for a long time has been hops.
It has been.
And with the barbecue that we're talking about, there's smoke.
Yeah.
I'm trying to draw a parallel. Who wants to jump in on that? Because for me, my idea of cooking was like a Le Creuset skillet, braising. I never really cooked with smoke.
Yeah. I think that, when it comes to making beers that go with barbecue, you have to look at that slightly differently because sometimes the acridity of smoke doesn't pair well with the sort of bitterness of a hoppy beer. So you definitely have to back off the bitterness. You have to err on the side of fruity flavors. And I think for the best barbecue pairing beers, you really kind of have to back off that and think about just the most basic swillable beers that you can get. Like we have the barbecue beer that we always recommend to people is our Hackensack Lager, which is a beer that you're going to be able to get all over New York State here shortly.
Promise?
I promise. I promise. That's, and it is a...
And I know where Hackensack is. That's one place
you do,
I know.
Yeah. And it is a, you know, basic Munich Helles pale lager. It's delicious. It's pale yellow. You can serve it to your friends and family who are Coors Light drinkers, and they're not going to look, you know, askance at it. So it's quite good. But when it comes to hops, like, hops are hard. You know, hops are, you know, getting good quality hops is a challenge nowadays because of the way the hop market is. And pairing hoppy beers with barbecue is super hard.
Taking photos.
Yeah, there we go. So the beer you have in front of you right now.
Well, the reason I say is because people used to talk about beer and barbecue pairings, and for years it was like, oh, pick an American IPA.
No, no, I would never do that. Because, like, you don't want anything too bitter, right? With barbecue, you want a beer that has an alcohol presence, but you don't want it to have an overt bitterness. And I think a lot of times that depends a lot on the type of wood that's used.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's like you mentioned bitter, and the first thing that comes to mind is mesquite.
Yeah.
I know nobody uses mesquite up here, but down in Texas, mesquite's a very big deal. Certainly. A lot of places use it, and it is a very bitter. Yeah. It would remind me of something like a bitter beer.
And
like
even classic Texas barbecue with post oak can drive a bitterness to it.
Well, post oak, I'm getting a bunch of red oak right now, and it burns really fast, and because you get a lot of creosote, because you get the creosote, you get a little, you know, so yeah, I can see that hops, wood smoke kind of.
Yeah, it doesn't always go well. The beer we're drinking right now is Elementary Random Placement of Things. This beer is named after our former taproom manager who used to get angry every time brewers would leave things in the taproom. People would leave, like, their backpacks, their keys, their
boots. What the hell is this doing in here?
And so she would just steal their things and put them in random locations. And
that's you way to do it. Yeah.
Your keys are on top of a fermenter, right. Or, you know, your boots are, you know, in the back
the
under
trunk
a picnic
of my car.
Table. So Random Placement of Things is named after Chelsea, but it's a basic light. Stylistically, it's an XPA, which is a huge thing in the Pacific Northwest now. It's kind of halfway between, halfway between a IPA and a pale ale. So it's hoppier than a pale ale, but not quite as alcoholic as a modern, you know, sort of East Coast New England style IPA, still with a light, bright hop fruit presence. So this one is Citra and Mosaic are the two hops. It's a way more Citra than Mosaic, almost a 3-to-1. Just enough Mosaic to bring some of that berry notes in there, and a lot of wheat content. So it brings a moderate alcohol, 6.5% experience, but still with enough hop flavor to drive through for hop heads.
Well, cheers to you, Blake. So cheers. Jersey beer is on the rise,
yes,
man.
Yes, 100%.
Great job.
Just like Jersey really, barbecue.
Yeah. And a lot of the guys in the competitions coming in now, and our competitions are different. We're not talking about Kansas City style. To me, everything we do is like a New York City restaurant type, you know, tasting. But there's a lot more guys cooking barbecue in Jersey coming in to do events in the city with us.
Awesome, yes.
And you're one of them.
Thank you, yes. Thank you for accepting me. You know, I think, you know, people in Jersey, you know, we're always like, you know, we're not one of the five boroughs, so we're like the underdog. And
we're
you know,
the sixth borough.
Sixth borough. I don't even know if they consider that,
the
you know.
46th borough.
I mean, we're less New York than Staten Island. You know? Yeah. But, you know, I mean, we have, you know, people, you know, most people in New Jersey probably work in New York, so they're part of the New York scene, but, you know, we don't get the cred, street cred of being New Yorkers. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are, you know, into barbecuing, into craft brewing. And, you know, for me, it's great to see, you know, many people from Jersey coming out to compete in Brisket King, Rib King, and, you know, all these barbecue competitions.
So Jersey's a little different. I know the liquor licenses are different. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get a bar. It's hard to have even wine and beer at your restaurant.
Yeah.
So what's it like owning a restaurant in Jersey without having a liquor license?
I say it's very tough. I mean... We're, you know, broadcasting right now in Roberta's. They have liquor license here. You know, it's like 4:30. We came in. There's people drinking, eating pizza. It's great. You know, like I don't have that luxury. So, you know, I can't have just a lost leader say, I'm doing wing specials for 50 cents each. You know, drink some beer. Mm. So everything I got to do is, you know, it's more about just selling the food and not offsetting food costs with alcohol. So, you know, I have to be more creative in terms of just food
might make,
and marketing.
Might make what you're doing better that way, you know?
It could. Yeah. It could.
It also makes partnerships really important. So, like, Rob doesn't have a liquor license in his restaurant, but he does have a bodega right next door that has a liquor license. So that means that, you know, we have to make sure that our sales staff have the beer on time or Elementary beer on time in that place. We have to make sure that the right merchandising is there, you know, window stickers or table tents in his restaurant that say, hey, go next door, because he doesn't have a liquor license, but he's BYO. So, you know, go next door, get the elementary beer, bring it over here, drink it, enjoy your food. You know, so we can kind of play these games where even though the liquor license situation is pathological and awful and we waste a lot of time and money in Trenton trying to fix it, you know, the situation is such that we can partner together and get the best of both companies working together to one goal.
Absolutely. Have you noticed people doing that? Will people go get like a six pack of a, you know, your lager?
Absolutely. I mean, the store right next to us, I mean, you know, because the success of the first launch of Soul Brothers was very popular. You know, they sold out in like a week, maybe, if that. And then, you know, we've been waiting for the new batch. And, you know, he's, every time I go in there, he's like, he's calling elementary and he's waiting for the new shipment to come in. So
that store got 15 cases of Soul Brothers delivered. They were sold out 6 days later.
That's good news.
15 cases of beer. Now, in New Jersey, that's a success story in our area. And that's not including the, you know, 60 other cases that got sent out to other stores that sold out immediately.
That's amazing. Back to just barbecue. So, Eric, earlier you were saying, what is, if I say Trinity to you, what's the Trinity in Texas?
The Holy Trinity of barbecue is brisket, sausage, and ribs. And like the brisket, obviously, you know, variation on that. Sausage is usually going to be whatever's in-house, you know? And then ribs is usually going to be pork ribs. It's going to be, you know, St. Louis cut pork ribs. And that's just, you know, whenever you go into a barbecue restaurant and you want to know, like, how good they are or what they're doing, you just, you know, say, give me the three, give me the Trinity, and then you can just tell what kind of barbecue restaurant just based on the way they cook those three.
And what do you expect, say, like, this event on Thursday, how would you judge the ribs? What would you be looking for in general?
You're asking the totally wrong personal question. I'll say something really stupid on air, and I'm going to try to pull back on that. Although I am having enough beer now, I can just say anything. I don't care anymore.
You started off swearing, and now you're not swearing.
I know. I'm better. Like I said, I'm trying to be good.
All right, we'll go to New York.
Okay. So, all right. So I would say, yeah, I'm, you know, I've been doing a lot of these competitions, and you know, I'm just hoping for this competition that, you know, people are open-minded. You know, everyone comes with preconceived notions. Like for me, I'm saying, yeah, when I think of ribs, I'm thinking pork. You know, some people might do beef, but I just hope that the judges, and I believe so. I saw some of the list of the judges. I know some of their backgrounds. So I think, you know, to be open-minded and
Ed Randolph, Handsome Devil Barbecue.
Exactly.
His new book's out.
If it gets too wide, though, if it gets too wide, like open-minded, then you could have literally every single person that's entering the contest all do something that's worthy of winning.
Yeah.
But they can't all win.
No,
because they're all doing something different. So if you have something that's very specific, like we're just going to do this rib with this kind of sauce with this kind of time, and who does it the best, now you truly have a contest. But what we're having now, it's not really a contest. It might be kind of like a
showcase.
Either a showcase. There you go.
But, you know, on KCBS, I've done a couple of those. You know, like everyone's doing the same style of ribs. You know, they're doing sweet, a little spicy, with a lot of sauce.
Right.
You know, to me, that's a little boring, because then if you go a little out of the box, someone who might win Rib King would do poorly in a KCBS.
Exactly. Sure.
And to me, that seems, you know, very biased. Like, all right, these are the KCBS like standards. So some people are judging this is a rib.
You know what I bet's going to happen? I bet somebody's going to make a McDonald's imitation McRib.
That could happen.
And actually,
watch it win.
Somebody, there was a New York City guy that did make his version of McRib. It might have been Mighty Quinn's.
Mighty Quinn's.
Yeah.
Really?
It's called
MQ Rib.
MQ Rib.
So it's like a boneless rib that you put onto a sandwich and
eat? Or some people put like a whole, even the bone in the sandwich.
Huh.
I've seen a...
Or you make some kind of pressed patty of...
that's what I'm talking about. That's crazy.
But it comes down to the sauce. I'll tell you, that's my story. I'm not going to give any shout-outs to the Mickey D. But years ago when I was like 18, I was traveling in Germany. The thing that opened my eyes the most, more than beer, was that at the McDonald's restaurant, they had the McRib sandwich. And that's what they featured in Germany. So I love ribs, man. I'll tell you that. I'm all excited about this event. Yes. You guys are pretty great chefs. And I love having you on the air.
Thank you.
So any last shout-outs you want to give? You know, give your victory speech before you win? Or are you going to wait and see?
I'm just going to say really quick, you know, thanks to everyone at Morgan's Barbecue. The Glaziers have done new things with that place, and they're doing great things. And to Judy Woodcock for getting me into the barbecue scene here in New York City because of a letter she wrote a long time ago. Other than that, I want to thank you. This has been wonderful. Thanks a lot, Jimmy.
That's great, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad to be part of, you know, the New Jersey, New York barbecue scene. And, I know whoever wins is going to have a great product, and, you know, we'll just see who has the best turn in that day. And, you know, we're going to have a great time. We're going to drink some Elementary Soul Brothers beer. So you know, I think it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. And thank Blake. You.
I'm just super happy to be some brewer kid. It's on the periphery who gets to hang out with awesome barbecue chefs on a random Tuesday. So having grown up in the South and life takes you in weird directions, and now I live in New York. It's a joy to be part of the community, so I appreciate it.
Well, Blake, this show is inspired by your collaborations with Thank you. Barbecue chefs, Wandering Q, the Kiddush Fesh beer, which is like a great whiskey festival that they're putting together.
That's a great whiskey festival. We're doing a variant on, we have a beer we do every year called our Smoked Peach Kolsch. We smoke peaches, put them in a Kolsch. It's delicious. Ari showed up. He's around the corner from us in Hackensack, his new place, and he said, I want to do that beer, but I want to do a special edition of it. So we're doing a sour version of that beer. So it's going to be a sour smoked peach Kolsch.
So Hackensack is hot, man.
Hackensack is hot.
Sixth borough. We're going to trade Staten Island to New Jersey, and we're going to take Hackensack.
Take Hackensack in.
And I used to live in Hackensack.
Controversial.
Yeah, I'm very close to Hackensack.
You're good.
So it's fantastic to have the opportunity to work with all these chefs.
Great. You guys are awesome. Thanks so much for joining me here today. Eric, Blake, and Rob. And Rob Cho, quick. How many things begin with Cho? You've seen...
I got Cho Nut, Cholanda Fries, Austin Cho, Let My People Cho. I mean,
Cho Zen.
It keeps going.
You guys are rock stars. Big shout out thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, engineer, Matt Patterson. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.